Welcome to another dope episode of Shattering Slavitude. Hashtag Ask the Phoenix to Shatter Slavitude. I'm your host with the most, Vic Nodge, or the Phoenix. That's what y'all want to call me. You know, we got my guy at Gooso Swavy, the big goose, in the space, the place to be. Damn. We got my man Peter, a.k.a. Peter Mitchell, from 3 Men and a Baby in here, the legend. As always, I trust that this exciting episode greets you all well. You know, it's our joy to get you all unstuck and help you to progress your mindset or evolve into a money mindset. And, you know, try to help you change your perspective so that you can experience the world and not, like, for the most part, your limitations, more importantly, financial limitations. So here we love to support you all in enhancing creativity, resilience, imagination, and grit, or at least tapping into those things deliberately. Oh yeah, now this just happens to be my life's work, as some of y'all know, but that, you know, I'm curious. I'm always learning more. So what that means is I know nothing at all. And with knowing nothing at all, I'm always hungry to learn more. And that's just how we are. That's what we do on here. So ride with us and let's realize your unlimited potential. All right. So today's episode, very exciting episode, as aforementioned, is about head of the table. So when I was a kid, this is what made me think about head of the table. Because when I was a kid, whenever we would get together for like holiday dinners or something like that, and the whole family would be around at our house, and I would pick a seat at the end of the table, and I would always be told that you can't sit there. That's reserved for the head of the family, which was my dad, in a very patriarchal sense. So I would, you know, would always have to move and either go to the kiddie table or find one of the chairs that was attached, you know, just on the side of the table, on the little leaves. So the significance of head of the table is the most important people, or the most important persons that's sitting to make decisions, or that's at the family meal or whatever like that. So we often talk about having a seat at the table, right? And that's the hot button conversation. But what are we doing once we have a seat at the table? So that's what we discussing today. But I like to look at the table instead of being like, we sitting down and we having something to eat. That's a bit simple. I like to say that we sitting at the board table, the boardroom table, the conference table of your life. You got to make decisions in the C-suite of your life. So you might be like, well, what's the C-suite? What is a C-suite? I don't know what C-suite means. I don't even know what you're talking about with that. Well, according to Google, an overview of C-suite roles and responsibility, a company C-suite is one of the most valuable assets. It's where you got the CEO, CIO, CTO, CFO, all those other C's. The CEO serves a crucial role that goes beyond decision making. The CEO, or chief operations officer, works closely with the CEO and acts as their deputy. Trustworthiness is an important personality factor in hiring anybody in the C-suite roles. So you might have had plans on coming to the table as whatever it is that you came to the table as, chief creativity officer, chief operating officer, chief technical officer, chief financial officer, chief marketing officer, and chief information officer, or chief intelligence officer. So you had this grandiose dream of making it to the table, like a seat at the table. So now it actually happens. So what are we doing? What's happening? Now that you have this valuable spot at the table, you're leading, which was in the old days was the patriarchal space. Now that we have this equity, it's not reserved for just the oldest male in the family. What are we doing with it? Or even better, with being in that space, what are your ideals? Do you plan on being the chief executive at the table? Do you plan on establishing an institution? Do we even know what an institution is? So last episode, we talked about you really wanting a mansion with the world being a stage. You really want this mansion. You're willing to do anything to get it, right? But you don't really understand that mansion represents institutional wealth. You're like, well, what is institutional wealth, right? So let's look at what institution is, right? Institution is an act of instituting, according to Merriam-Webster. It's an establishment, a significant practice, relationship, or organization in society or culture. Also, something or someone firmly associated with a place or thing. Another definition for institution is an established organization or corporation, such as a bank or university, especially of a public character. Another definition for institution is a facility or establishment in which people such as sick or needy live and receive care, typically in a confined space and often without individual consent. Now we know on our platform that many of you probably need that facility or establishment, you know what I mean, where you need to be confined in that padded room with your straitjacket. Now I'm just playing. No judging going on here. But no, we're gonna focus on the establishment. An established organization or corporation, a significant practice, relationship, or organization in society or culture. That's the institution that we're referring to. So what's the institution that you're making up? Whether it be your brand, whether it be your character, your personality, your attitude when you performing on the job. What is the institution that you're establishing, that you're creating in your world? You can't drive a Porsche and then when it need brakes, you like, damn, how much is gonna cost? Oh, $1,500. Oh man, I can't really get those done. So you living outside your means. You want to just get the Porsche to stunt. You want to get the Range Rover to stunt, but you can't. Your lifestyle doesn't really support that because you haven't built or established that institution of wealth that these things are taking care of themselves. We don't see those tedious ingredients, those small nuanced things that create or that contributes to the success of those high performers. We often see them just at that space and driving a nice car, having everything, having a mansion, having the life, the ladies or the men in their lives that they want, and then partying and doing all the things that we see them doing. But we don't see all the other factors within that makes them successful. It's just like the Titanic and the iceberg. All we see is that tip, that top part, and we think that we can navigate around that, but we don't see all those other things beneath the surface that has contributed to the greatness of this entity, right? So, what are we doing? What are we doing? What are we doing for this space? I know when I was a little kid, I was hungry for the space just to have the space, just because I was denied the space, because I couldn't sit in the space. Like, nah, this space is reserved for somebody else, right? Well, what's the caliber in which that this person has this place reserved for them? Right? Because it was my dad. Because he was the patriarch. He get the biggest piece of chicken. He gets the head of the table. He gets the mom. Right? But did you get stuck in that space as junior? Did you get stuck in that space that there's always somebody else in leadership, that there's always somebody else with the power and that you're powerless and that your voice doesn't count. So why even try? I'm not built for C-suite anyway. Like I often have conversations because I love history and I love people. So I'd be asking folks, like, especially like folks that retired or get into a retiree position, and I'd be like, you know, I asked about their career, you know, with the ups, the downs, the progression, the lack of progression, and so forth. So a lot of folks that come from the traditionalist era, where you were just meant to be work and be comfortable, when they retire, they retire with their position, in that position, say their rank, for lack of better terms, with all of the pay reserved for that rank. So you might get anywhere from 50 to 100% of your pay that you was making every month, right? So often when I ask these individuals, so why didn't you move up? Why didn't you seek promotion or progression within your career field? Didn't you want more? And it was just like, oh, no, hell no. You know what I mean? I just wanted to do what I was doing and, you know, collect my check and just go ahead. I'm like, okay, well, what? Did you want to be like a foreman? You didn't want to have a supervisor status? You didn't want any? Nah, I ain't want none of that shit. Man, they ain't making, they wasn't making what I was making. They couldn't get overtime. They had to oversee people. And if people didn't do what they were supposed to be doing, then they could lose their job, da 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 da, so on and so forth. But what I've learned in the corporate world is you want to accept the title of responsibility. So if there's a opportunity for you to gain the role of a supervisor, it would behoove you to take that role as a supervisor, because you never know where you're going to end up after that. Like, why would you kill yourself? Why would you kill an opportunity for yourself, for your career, just to say, oh, no, I don't want more? So if the company shuts down, or if they need to lay people off, who's getting laid off work? The workers. You know, the expendable ones. We could either lay you off or bring somebody else in to fill your position. I'd rather have a mission essential position, even if, right, they could get rid of me. I've done enough for myself within my position to learn enough within my craft to be picked up anywhere else with another company. I didn't just take the job. I took agency. I still had a level of independence. I still had skill that even if I lost this position, I never lose what I learned. I never lose my skill. And those things are transferable. I probably need to get in with another network, show off my skills, earn some social capital, build relationship capital. Y'all know the rules. We talk about this all the time. And try this thing all over again. There would be no need. I repeat, there would be no need to do this all over, like to do this thing or to try to seek after success only to stay stagnant, to stay static in one place and to do nothing for 40 years or 30 years or 20 years and say that, well, I've been successful within my career, right? But are you successful within your life? What is your life's purpose? What are you doing with your life? Is there any upward mobility in your life? Do you seek upward mobility? If you're not seeking those kinds of things, then you already know what you can do, because this platform ain't for you. But if you are in search of those things, then it's time that we start to practice the skills that's going to get you some momentum, some mobility from the space that you are, that you currently are, or from this, you know, to the space that you seek. And then what might you be able to do, or what you might be able to practice from that space that you win, that you acquire, that C-suite space? Because that's the seat at the table. That's what everybody is a part of this for. Especially if you're a professional. Everybody, it's the hot button thing, man. I want the seat at the table. I want to see that at the table. Okay. So the C-suite executives is the table that you at, or that you want to be at. Now that you're at that C-suite executive table, what's your ambition? You riding it out, or are you the executive? Do you have ambitions on being executive? And then once if you do decide to have this mobility, is that a part of who you are? Are you committed to establishing this level of excellence as an institution? This is established public practice. This is what we do. Are you brave enough to be doing that? Like my man Peter was just saying earlier, like that's just okay. It's just like obvious. That's what people do. But if that were the case, then if people were asking themselves these kind of hard questions, I feel like there wouldn't be such a argument of if folks were employed, employable, pulling themselves up by the bootstraps, independent, fiscally sound, you know, just what it means to be a capitalist, what it means to be an American. We aren't having those conversations. That's not what's going on. We get too caught up in trying to make somebody love us or trying to find ourselves and our partner. And which is all false. So this is what we're talking about. This is what we're talking about today. This is what this episode is. I done ran it for 15 minutes. We got to open it up to two other professionals in the room. We like Goose. I know his background. He's got the clothing, the clothing billion brands. Now he's doing customs work. I don't know what he's doing with that. I don't know why they hired him for that position, but maybe he could tell more about that. You got Peter, that's a financial advisor to the stars in the area. So we're gonna build some dialogue of what it means to be either a C-suite in a space, or what it means to aspire to have a C-suite in their life. What that means with going forward and establishing institutional wealth. So Goose, like, from when you had the clothing company, I don't know if that was a part of which I was doing, if it was a legacy brand, but would you call it that?
I don't think it was a legacy brand. It was like streetwear. Like, it was just what we wanted to wear. It was like making stuff we wanted to wear and for like our friends that we knew what they wanted and stuff like that. I wouldn't say it's like a legacy brand. That was just for the streets.
So ultimately, what was the goal with the street brand?
To ultimately bridge that gap between the streets and like business, like eventually get into like CEO type positions and like really kind of build from there, like take something like straight from the streets and bring it to like corporate America.
So that would require you to at least have some culture about what corporate America looked like, right?
Right.
Especially being from the streets. Right. So what kind of position did you assume within your company?
I was doing accounting, and I was also helping with like designs and stuff like that. And Zach did. He went to school for business and stuff like that, so he was doing like a lot of like the like marketing and everything along those lines.
Shout out Zachary Billions. That's what we're talking about at Zachary Billions.
Right, right.
So y'all never really formally garnered any titles for yourselves. Y'all didn't even play house with the titles to say that, okay, well, I'm the chief marketing or chief financial officer.
Nah, I've never had like real titles like that. I mean, I just took care of the accounting stuff and helped design, and he would help design and took care of like marketing. And then we would both come together when it came time for like actual like business decisions. Like those were mutual decisions.
So was even like, was seat at the table, was that even a conversation that y'all was having? Like, let's say like in the organization of doing good business, did you frequent the conversation around, this is currently where we are with our business, and this is where we want to be. And in order for us to do that, I need to be steering this in a marketing capacity, and you need to be steering this in like a direction, a creative direction capacity. So
yeah, all the time, we had those conversations like all the time, pretty much like every quarter. We would just kind of like go back and look at everything and see how like it went and figure out what we need to do. Like go from there, like, all right, someone needs to step up here, someone needs to step up there. We need to do more of this or less of that or whatever.
And how did that aid in the progression of your movement in which y'all were forming?
It was just easy, like knowing that like we each had to focus on something. Like you were able to just focus on what you had to do, and it just made everything smooth. And it grew pretty fast, honestly. So I feel like it worked out well.
And then ultimately, were you able to accomplish the things that you wanted to accomplish from it?
Still in the process, so I wouldn't say. I mean, we're taking steps all the time, so I would say, yeah, we're heading in that direction.
Excellent. So it's safe to say that you came to the table, that C-suite table, or you had a vision of being at that C-suite table, and you still consider yourselves as tackling that feat.
100%, still in progress. Because neither of us are CEOs or anything like that, or like true businessmen yet. So
let me ask you this. Do you think that it's important for you to be efficient as a chief executive officer, or even in the position that you're in, to progress the company and start to grow into an institution?
Yeah, I guess I never really thought about it, though. Now that you say it, yeah. But I never really thought about it like that.
Sweet, sweet. What about you, Peter? How about you? I mean, well, I could say that I think, from what I imagine about what you do in financial advisory, that you would have to, I guess, visualize something. You would at least have to be imaginative about what you see yourself having within that space. Did you see yourself having that seat at the table talk?
What do you mean by having the seat at the table talk? With who? Myself or with the company?
With the company. Like, do you see yourself like, man, I want to be one of those guys. I want to be one of those change makers. I want to be in that C-suite. I want, you know, somebody looking at me like, you know, I look at Mr. such and such. You know what I mean? Do you see yourself with that,
like,
you know,
CFO?
Yeah, with that level of ambition?
I mean, I think it's just a position where you have to grow into everything. You learn as you go. You're never taught. No one's ever taught how to actually financially advise someone. It's a learn on the job experience. And each part of the process is a stepping stone of you actually learning how to advise people and how to manage money and how to actually deal with the client specifically. Because every client is different, and every position within the company is a different stepping stone in a different direction. So it's all based off where you want to go and how far you're willing to go to get there.
But so that builds up a great point. So that means that you think about how far you're willing to go within your space, or what you're willing to do to get as far as you're willing to go. So what is it that you're saying that you want to do? Are you saying that you want ultimately to be in that chief executive space for yourself or for your company, or is it more so just, I just want to have me a little gig and make sure I'm good, my family's good?
Eventually I want to move up to something obviously different, but I have to learn the business in and out before I can make those steps to move up there.
Okay, perfect. So we all agree that chief executive is the space that we want to be in, right? So now let's bring it back to, let's just say, the spirit of Thanksgiving. Let's use the spirit of Thanksgiving and the Thanksgiving table, right? Big long buffet table. The whole family is there, and this happens to be your family. Now you consider yourself to be the patriarch, right? And yet the family feels that the dinner would be better ran by somebody else in the family. So you don't get the head of the table seat. Does that upset you?
I wouldn't necessarily say it upsets me, but I mean, like, I feel like I'm an alpha, so I just like to lead in general. So
does that mean that you're supposed to lead because you like to lead?
No, I don't think that's what I'm saying. I don't think it would upset me. I don't think upset's the right word.
So what would you say is the right word?
How I feel if that happened?
Yeah, like you, like, yeah, it's my turn. Like, yeah, I'm sitting at the head of the table. These motherfuckers, they better know what it is. And then they like, you still ain't qualified. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you still got to sit a chair next to the head of the chair. All right? Maybe you could get CIO right now.
Maybe next year.
Yeah. Are you okay with that? How about you, Peter? Are you okay with that?
I mean, I guess it depends on the situation and who it was and why they felt they were in a better position to lead than I was.
I guess you both make great points, but they are still kind of vague, right? Because they're circumstantial. They're situational. They're subjective.
No, I'm saying, like, if I, like, I get what you, like, the analogy you're trying to use. I'm saying, like, I'm just comfortable in a position where I'm leading. I like to have control of the situation. So I feel like I know Like I just like to lead it. You know what I'm saying? So I would like to be there in that position. So if I wasn't in that position, or like I'm the leader, like I would be trying to work to get to that spot.
So great point. Super great point. So you say that you will be working to get it. So here's what I would think about that position, right? So even if I've been busting my ass, right? And I feel like this year is my year. I'm the head of the table, right? And they like, nope, not quite yet, right? My very first thing would to be consult with the decision making, this decision makers, the stakeholders. Okay, so what did I do efficiently? What did I do that was inefficient based on the criteria of what it means to run this organization, right? And where might I improve, or how might I improve to the standard? Because if I emotionally crumble, become pissed off, and start shitting on you, fuck all y'all. It's my table. Steve Jobs it, right? What happened to him?
Well, he got fired.
He got voted out. Which is, it's kind of worse than being fired.
Right.
Because it's your company. Mm-hmm. But the C-suite executives basically said you're unfit.
That's what I'm saying.
To lead.
That's what I'm saying. Like, that's why I was like saying I wouldn't be upset. Like it wouldn't be coming from like a place of anger. Like I wouldn't be like, fuck all this. Like get like be like that. Like I wouldn't be like that. It would be more. It would be like a humbling thing.
Like take your ball home. Take your ball back.
Yeah, no, not like that.
It wouldn't be like that.
No.
How about you, Peter?
I mean, are they really the head of the table? Not everyone sitting at the head of the table is actually the head of the table.
But that's a difference in perspective. That's also being introspective. That's taking the time to first evaluate your situation and go and ask, hey, what was the situation here? Like, why is it that my situation ended up like this when this was supposed to be my year, right? And then take the advice of what happened. Pay attention to what actually was going on within that space, right? Like, it could be small things that you could change, that you could just work on. You in the CIO position. To me, the wealth is within the position that I'm in. I still moved from the place that I was at into the place that I'm in right now, which means that there is a chance to learn something new. There's still a chance of excellence, right? And I still get to master my new space. So, like, why would I frown at this new opportunity? It's all providential. Why would I frown at this opportunity that's still preparing me for my eventuality of running the helm of the ship anyway? It's all about institution. It's being established, well established. And what it means to be well established is I have to figure out what I would do in a situation versus saying that I don't know what I would do in that situation, or I feel like I would or wouldn't do in this situation. CEO requires that you've had some hardships and have been able to navigate said hardships. So let's get into some like those responsibilities a little bit, because I think that would make it paint a better picture. So let's look at CEO, Chief Executive Officer, what they do. At the top of the C ecosystem, CEOs oversee the executive team, company developments, and public image. There's usually only one CEO. Some startups have two, with both having the title of co-CEO, but the balance of power can be difficult to negotiate. People management skills, financial acumen, and good communication skills are a must. CEOs are a bridge between board members and the rest of the C team. So again, you're that bridge between those board members that may or may not like you and the rest of the C team. So what they don't do, they don't act with total autonomy. There's a belief that CEOs can do whatever they please, but they're usually at the behest of the chairman board. So Chief Operating Officer, what they do. It's a little ambiguous. By definition, depending on the company, COOs oversee business operations. This can include data analysis, customer segmentation, measuring the effectiveness of production and communication strategies, and generally greasing squeaky wheels. Often, CEOs are the unsung heroes of the startup scene because they're so important to the organization's success, but they often stay out of sight. What they don't do is they don't depend on their contract. There are calls for companies to be more transparent and clear with hiring COOs because, you know, their job descriptions can be so overarching. They could have so much power within what they do. CMO, Chief Marketing Officer. What they do, customer acquisition and retention, brand management and market research. Being a CMO is constantly is a constantly evolving role, almost like COO. Their job is to tap into how customers research and buy products and then find ways to influence their habits, their users' habits. As well as traditional print or billboard advertisements, new generation CMOs know the internet is key and can be overseeing product placements and virtual reality worlds. What they don't do is think inside the box. In fact, some CMOs are changing their titles to Chief Innovation Officer or Chief Creativity Officer because their role is so much more than just advertising. CFO, that's that Peter role, the Chief Financial Officer, take responsibility for the financial risk of the company. They're controllers, reporters, and strategists, not only overseeing the capital structure of the company, but also communicating with the rest of the C-suite to make sure their actions, pricing, budgeting, expenses are financially smart and sound. Economic forecasting is an important part of their job. They often work in tandem with a bookkeeper or an accountant. What they don't do is they always play it safe. It's a misconception that all CFOs are risk averse and they're calculated risk as they'll take calculated risk if it could end in a payout. That's not always true. CFOs are not always risk averse. What's the opposite? Risk tolerant. They can be often risk tolerant. Like some are really good at what they do. CIO, Chief Information Officer. They're in charge of the technology and computer systems that support a company and its mission. The job title comes from pre-internet era when the CIO would manage the mainframe computer. Now CIOs are responsible for all digitized systems and strategies that help scale the company. As leaders, they also have to inspire employees to embrace these systems and manage any resistance to change. What they don't do is coding. They generally aren't hands-on when it comes to building technology, instead focusing on strategy and leadership and implementation. Chief Talent Officer, you got Chief Digital Officer, still Chief Customer Officer, Chief Innovation Officer, which we already really went over. And I mean, some companies even they get a little further. They innovate further and they make up even more complex title. And shout out to Collective Hub for being the reference for that. So with that space, right? With now knowing that what these C-suite roles and titles are, where are you? Are you seeking a place at the table? Do you currently have a place at the table? Are you the chief executive officer? And the reason why I'm asking these questions is because it's just as important to know where you are within your process. So you know when to switch gears. So you know where to go next. So as of right now, Goose, after hearing all of that, where would you say that you are now in your company? What role do you have? What title do you have? What responsibilities do you have in your C-suite of billion brands?
I'm probably more like CFO than anything.
So Chief Financial Officer.
More than anything. And then like I feel like me and Zach split CEO, and then he definitely is like CIO for sure.
He's the Chief Innovation Officer. Okay, so he's more in charge of the marketing, the relationships,
right,
with everybody else in the brand. So what do you think? I can't even say what do you think his overall ambitions are for C-suite title. But what's yours?
CEO, both of us, for both of us.
So as this startup, you guys see yourselves as co-CEOs, like they said, is rare in those startups. So, which would mean at this point, being that you guys are partners, correct? That you would have to assume the responsibilities of all the C-suite roles.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I would say right now, like, it leans more towards like CFO, but like, or nothing. Especially when we had the store and stuff like that, it was more CFO than anything. But like now, it's like CEO. Like, we're both trying to do the same things.
How about you, Peter?
Mine would obviously have to be CFO. Just based off what I'm already doing right now.
And where do you see yourself?
He was saying in the future, like.
Yeah, like, where do you see it? Like, so you're at the table now, and you're a CFO at the table. Like, where do you see yourself going from here?
Either stay in CFO or moving.
No, I would definitely move to a more CEO-related position. Having your own business is key.
So, you see yourself breaking off and being the principal at your own financial firm?
I don't necessarily think it would be my own financial firm, but I would head more lines of consulting.
So you would just like to consult and help businesses scale and make more money and things like that?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. So, in the due respect of your process right now, how does what you're currently doing help you to garner that CEO position of your own firm?
I would say right now it's just a learning curve, just learning the ins and outs of the businesses and where the business fails and where it succeeds and what I would need to possibly do to get to the position of owning, you know, my own company, and like how you would operate with management and HR and just employees and customers and everything. Like, you have to work inside the business to understand the business before you can own your own.
Awesome. So what I hear you saying is that what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to be a spy working on behalf of the Peter Company, the Peter Enterprises Company, and I'm going to business hack. I'm going to find out all the strategy that I can, and I'm going to synthesize the strategy that I need to scale my company or be effective at leading from my platforms. So that's exactly, you know, what I see myself doing. But it's kind of weird for me because I feel like I'm in all three spaces. I feel like I'm looking at the table, wanting to be a part of the table. I feel like I'm at the table, and then I feel like I'm the CEO of the table. Exactly. So could you say that again? Because I don't know if the mic.
It just depends on what room you're in. Because I feel like that sometimes too. Just depending on who's in the room. To me.
So what does that look like?
What do you mean?
So like when you say like it depends on the room that you're in. Like give me more. Like of what you mean by that. Like give me more.
Me and Zach like evolved Billion Brands into like it was just like a clothing company, and now it's just like it's kind of like a. Like, it's just a brand in general. Like, it's not, like, we're not just a clothing company. Like, I DJ, he's doing virtual reality stuff. We're still
graphic
doing,
design,
we're still,
too,
yeah,
right?
We're still doing clothes. He's still doing graphic design, and I help with some of that stuff. I mean, we got our hands in so many pots. Like, you know what I'm saying? His girlfriend's a part of it now, and she's painting and making custom things all the time, you know what I'm saying? And she's actually, like, trying to start a whole school. So like
right,
you know what I'm
right,
saying?
Right.
We're even dipping into education now, you know what I'm saying? So it's just like
right,
it's
right.
Not just one thing we're focused on. So I feel like depending on what the room looks like, because we're not experts in any of like all those things now, you know what I'm saying? We got the clothing thing now, we've been doing that for a long time. So that's like I feel like in a situation like that, like I'm at the table. Because I've been doing that for so long. And like couple other things, like in different areas, I probably am not at the table yet, but like when I get in those spaces, I just kind of sit back and like observe what's going on and try to learn how to move in those areas.
So, that brings up to a great point. Like, are you pushing yourself to be in new spaces now to scale the business more? Or like, so like, it sounds like So if I'm a consultant and I'm in this space and I'm like, okay, well, Billion Brands actually sounds like it's a billion brands, but like, what is it actually doing? Is it a creativity firm? Is it a creativity outlet? Like, is it like, how do you meet your consumer, right? So I would be like, well, how are you meeting your consumer with these things? But to me, it sounds like you guys are more so centered at this point on what's your niche products for the company.
Right.
Right. To, I guess, like, focus on building that first before you go into anything else.
Yeah.
Like, because like you were saying, on one hand, yeah, like, in my management role of the company, I'm a CIO. But in my everyday responsibility within the company, I'm learning.
Right.
I'm doing a bunch of other shit. Like, again, like what Peter was saying, I'm learning as much as I can so I can start to synthesize my own strategy to build more.
Right.
But take me more into what that looks like with being in all three spaces. Like looking at the table, being at the table, and then moving to the head of the table.
I'm not sure what you're asking.
So you said earlier, you said when I said that I feel like I'm in all three spaces, right? Yeah. You said like I feel like I'm in
right.
That, I'm in that too. So I'm just
I feel like that's what I'm saying. I feel like it depends on like what department, like that I'm in. Like when it comes to like clothing, I feel like I'm at the table. Like we've done that for so long. I feel like I've earned a seat at that table. Like I know how like different fabrics feel and stuff like that. Like I know clothing in and out. Like I know that shit. And then when it comes to like DJing, I feel like I'm almost at the table if I'm not at the table with that. You know what I'm saying? I've been doing that for 5-6 years now. You know what I'm saying? I know the ins and outs of that stuff. I know how all the stuff works. I know how to like the equipment. I know how to work audio, all that stuff, you know?
Right.
And then when it comes to like stuff like education, I'm still like learning that kind of stuff. I'm learning how like shit's set up and other stuff. And I'm learning how some of the business stuff works too, like on the go as I go too. So I feel like in a situation like that, like corporate, like I'm definitely not at the table. I'm kind of like on the outside looking in.
Wow. Is that because, I mean, why? Why do you feel like you're on the outside looking in with corporate? Do you feel like they're not accepting of who you are or what you do? Or like, are you not with those people?
Why do you feel like you're on outside? I don't feel like I'm not with those people. Besides Peter, like besides having Peter here every day, you know what I'm saying? And seeing what he does at work and stuff like that and talking about stuff he does at work. Like outside of that, I'm not really around.
But then again, that's not even the same kind of corporate, though.
No, I know.
So, like, so how is what Peter does as, oh, but you mean, like, as a consultant?
Yeah,
In corporate. Okay, right. I get what you're saying.
Like, he's still in corporate America.
I get what you're saying. How about you, Peter?
As far as what, the table?
Yeah. Like, is it static for you?
No, he's saying, like, I was just saying, like,
are you in all three spaces or are you in one of those spaces? I just feel like it was three for me. He said, I feel like it's that way for me too. Goose said that he feels like it's that way for him too. So I'm asking you, like, how do you feel about it? Do you feel like you in all three spaces the same or?
Just one. Or two.
I feel like I'm definitely not at the head of the table, but we're sitting.
But you're at
we're
the table,
sitting
right?
At the end of the boardroom right now.
But you're at the table.
So but we're at the table. Yeah, we're
so
at
you
the
feel
table.
Like you're at the table at least.
Yeah, I'm at least at the table.
Okay, so what does that
I'm
look
at the like? End of the table.
What does that look like in your world?
In my world, that just means I'm on my way, moving up,
soaking up game.
Yeah.
So. You're at a space that's tolerant for upward mobility, is
absolutely.
What you're saying.
Yes.
So if you're in a space where you could have more, as much as you want, if you apply yourself to have it.
Correct. Yes. Because there are people in the same position as me that aren't doing what I'm doing. It's all about
older and younger than you, I imagine.
Older, double my age. Not even. They just don't even care.
So they're like those persons that I was mentioning earlier that were just like, I don't really care to move up.
Right. There's a lot of them.
I just got my fucking job and that's what I'm going to do. Like we were talking about last episode when we were talking about I come from a blue collar family. I'm cool. I got a house. I got a car. I'm good. Like I don't see myself needing anything else other than this. But upward mobility is hinged on your ability to dream. you have to at first see yourself in that kind of position, because seeing is believing. You have to be able to activate that part of your brain that in which says that I can do that. Therefore, I will do that. I will exercise the mental temerity or tenacity, exercise whatever tenacity I need to manifest this. Right? Do you guys imagine? Do you guys dream? If you do dream, how wild do those dreams get? Do you see yourself flying to Monaco, participating at the poker fire game? The fucking yeah, not fire, bro. That was crazy. Dude was willing to, but they had some soldiers. Dude was willing to suck mahogany,
yeah,
just to get that, just to get it going. Just to keep that going. I said, yeah, they some real soldiers on that team. I guess I wouldn't have, I couldn't have said I would have done that. But what was he talking about?
You're dreaming.
Yeah. So you have to be able to see yourself in that position. Like, so Peter, who do you see yourself, like, who do you identify with, right? Because you come from here. So I don't imagine that you come from a long line of wealthy financial advisors who are coming from Buffalo. So... And that's not even a shot, like, at your family. I'm just saying, like, this is where we come from. Like, this is Buffalo. So, like, who do you look to? Like, what do you look to stay inspired or to inspire you to say that no matter what my situation is or where I was born, I know that that's what the fuck I will have as long as, you know, I walk towards what I see in my mind's eye.
I mean, I would say I look... in the direction of people that have already done it, that didn't have that background, that didn't have that upbringing.
Who are some of those people that you identify with?
I would say the last person I met was probably a college professor I had. He owned his own consulting firm. He had crazy investments, very successful, multimillionaire, and came from a blue-collar family. And he was the last person I think that I really came across that lived that lifestyle, that came from nothing, you would never know. Drives a Toyota Camry and lives in a small house, but is worth $26 million.
Damn.
So it's like, he never...
Especially here. That's... Yeah. That's going
to... That's baller.
Yeah, he started, that's like... He started working for...
Making people work for you, like slave money.
Well, he worked for the bank, and then he worked for a consulting firm, and then he figured out how he could do it by himself, and then after that, he just took off in investments, and now he owns his own consulting firm and teaches business marketing. He teaches four business courses out of college, so.
Nice.
Yeah, he's very successful, and his children are very successful. One of them is a web developer, so he instilled everything on his kids.
So I see you intricately have looked at this man life piece by piece, right?
Yeah.
And you would say that he's ahead of the table.
He's ahead of the table 100%.
And he's somebody that you could watch, that you could look at, emulate.
Right.
Be a mentee of.
Now, he's a mentor to a lot of people that came out of that college.
But including you, right?
Correct, yeah.
So you could be a mentee of this person to try to better learn the efficacy of his strategy to synthesize your own, right? How about you, Bruce? It's brilliant.
I have two, and that would be Future and LeBron.
Nice. LeBron is crazy.
LeBron is a good one.
That is crazy.
I just actually read an article about LeBron.
But if you know anything about I gotta know why. You gotta tell us why.
Just over the last couple of years, LeBron. But
you have to tell us why.
Why? For what?
Like, why? Why are those guys your spirit animals?
Future, just for pretty much coming from nothing and no one really like believing in you and getting everything that you wanted, and then realizing you still don't fit in. You know what I'm saying? You still don't fit in that box that everyone tries to put you in. And then LeBron, just like the way he's able to handle everything, and he leads, and he's just very clutch. You know what I'm saying? Like he's very, I don't know, he just makes the right move, like, every time.
Every time?
I feel like every time.
Like, LeBron never makes a bad move?
I feel like he doesn't. I feel like he does what's best. Every time.
Okay.
Well, like, LeBron's 100%
ahead of the table.
Like, other...
He owns his own production agency.
Like, other people...
But,
like
this
other
is, people, but see, here's the diff... Like, this is what I argue about millennials. I don't think that there's... Like, for somebody like with him, what he's doing, I think that there's more than one head at that table. I think there's it's more of a council.
It's, yeah, it's him. It's him and
for what and, he's doing.
Him and his people. He's like he brings. You know what I'm saying? He brings his people with him, like with everything he does.
True.
I respect that.
Fucking right. You have to respect.
I'm saying it's not just him. Like he feels like it's a group effort and everything they do.
I feel like from the caliber of man that I'm watching, I feel like his wife. It's a huge factor in decision making.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
His friend circle, Maverick and them boys.
Everyone in his life, like, serves a purpose. You know what I'm saying? Like, they help him, like, with everything he does.
So that's a perfect segue. How important are the other beings in your life, in your ascension, in your maturity, in your elevation? Like, how important are they in your upward mobility of either getting to the table, being at the table, or being at the head of the table? Like,
I almost want to say it's like 100% important. Just like, I notice the difference. Like, I can go to LA for a month and I'll get more done than I get done here in Buffalo. Just because I'm around Zach, like, every day. It's more hands on, like, and I do more stuff when he's around, then when he's not around, I do less. You know what I'm saying? I don't do as much.
But why is that?
I get motivated off how much he works.
But is that an emotional tie?
Is it an emotional tie?
What do you mean? Because technically, you would think that you would be motivated with me and Peter being here.
That's what I'm saying. But that's why me and you hang out. You know what I'm saying? And
I like to think that there's a way that being around Zach inspires you in a way that I just can't.
No, I'm saying, like, I was just using that as an example. Like, I feel
no,
like...
I'm just, like, there's some people that's like that for me. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, if LeBron was my friend, there's a way that he can inspire me that you just can't.
Right, I agree.
You know, and there's a way that you can inspire me that he just can't.
Right.
So I naturally would think that your affinity for one another kind of allows you to be, you know... Like, let your guard down and probably be just that much more creative.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Okay. But I mean, it's like the same thing with you. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
I have different conversations with you than I have. Like, you and Zach are probably the two I have, like, the most, like, deep, in-depth conversations with. And then other people here and there, I'll have them, or I just won't have them at all. You know what I'm saying? So I feel more comfortable like that.
Right. You were saying something, Peter?
Yeah, I was just gonna say, I think it's just the capacity of what he's referring to. Like, Zach brings different things to the table than you bring. And what the
dynamics.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Zach's
perspective on, like, he's in virtual reality and digital media, and we're not in that.
So affinity has nothing to do with it. You think
No, I think that
how you feel about a person.
I think it has part to do with it for sure. But that's what I'm saying. I think it's like almost, like, I almost want to say it's 100% important, like, who you're around. Like, as far as you probably reaching your goal, you know what I'm saying, or getting to where you're trying to be, or get to the head of the table, like, the people around you are like,
So how efficient are you all at modulating those relationships to, like, build the team that you need? Like,
what's about figuring out who's a part of the team first?
That's what he's saying. How efficient are
you? But how efficient are you at moving those pieces around your board?
That comes with age. Wisdom, you learn things as you go.
So is it safe to say that you sacrifice a lot of success because you want to keep certain energy in your life?
Absolutely. And you
that's not good. That may not be good for you.
You have to learn to let it go, though,
which requires awareness. Oh, sorry, Pluto. Peter has this beautiful Siamese cat named Pluto. She's awesome. She's awesome. She leads us all. So for me, I find that where I am in my life, it's, I want to say easy for anything, but it's so less difficult for me to modulate relationships in my life. It's all about you.
You have no issue doing that at all.
No. No. Because I got to protect my energy. Right. You got to think about my situation.
You do that more than anyone. But I've ever met, I think.
I appreciate that. But I praise my situation. I look at from my situation from the start of how I grew up, right? I look at what people in my family was talking to me about who I would be in this space that I'm in right now, right? If I know that those persons was talking about me like that then, they still share that same rhetoric right now. They still have that for me, right? So it would be best for all of us. Right? If I modulate that relationship and hang with a Peter and Goose. Why would I try to start a podcast with somebody that is telling me that I hope you don't think you somebody special now because, you know, you got that apartment or you got your degree or, you know, or somebody that told me outside of, you know, in the arena of getting an award. Like, we wish you had got this job doing this instead of. So, like, how important is that modulation for y'all? Like, I'm willing to make those hard decisions because those decisions was already made hard for me. I was born into the situation I was born into. My mom being on drugs and whatever her life was like, and my dad, whatever his life was like. So, my friendships in my life, you know, was easy to be. Like, I started off designing them to fail.
Right.
Sabotaging them, like, aha, I knew you wasn't going to be the friend that you said you was going to be. I asked you to bring me a Capri Sun 10 days straight, and on the 11th day you ain't got one. You ain't my fucking friend for real. I knew you wasn't my friend, just like everybody else. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So, like, does that happen for y'all? Or are you at a place of awareness where you can modulate, you know what I mean, relationships in your life?
I'm able to now. I wasn't before.
Was it things in a way?
I think it was just myself in the way. Really?
Let's open that up a little more. Like, what would you mean by, like, you think it was you in your way?
I think it was just myself in the way. In the sense of, like, there were relationships I wanted to keep and I wanted to bring those people with me for the ride. And I would, you know, I would keep trying to, like, pull them. You know what I'm saying? Like, I would keep trying to lead them to the water and make them drink. And you can't do that. You know what I'm saying?
That's so fucking right.
So, like, it took me.
I'm a firm believer. If you bring them through it, you got to bring them through it.
Right, you got to drag them through it. Right. So,
like, there was. Come on.
It was a lot of those relationships.
Get your motherfucking head blown off trying to tell a motherfucker to come on. You know what I mean?
There was definitely, like, a lot of those relationships, like, when I was younger, that I definitely try to hold on to, especially once, like, we started getting shit going with the store and stuff like that. And then I realized that, you know, I can't do that. And then nowadays.
But what kind of, like, damage did you reap from holding on to those fucked up ass relationships? Like, did you automatically trust the good relationships? Like, say Peter automatically, like, let's just say for the sake of it, now we are all here. Like, how do you learn to appreciate Peter? You know what I'm saying? Like, how do you learn to appreciate a good, like, relationship, friendship in your life when you've been dealing with this fucked up shit?
Just like looking at their ambition and their like support, you know what I'm saying? Like their like level of support, you know what I'm saying? If they're like if they're open minded and just have like a level of support for you, like, as a person, you know what I'm saying?
I feel like support is, that's all the time. That's not like, okay, you came to my dance recital, you support me. No.
Right.
No. That's like, so support is like trust.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It's integrity, intelligence. It's I know that you're there. Like, I know, like, that's my dog. I don't have to. In fact, I don't even want to call. So, yeah, I don't know where it got cut off. But, sometimes I, like, with my, like, support system, with my support is weird for me. Because, like I was saying, sometimes I don't even want to call certain people because I know they'll be there for me. And it's like, I want to save that, mm-hmm. which can still, you know, fuck up my blessings. Because yeah, I'm not allowing.
It definitely does.
Yeah, I'm not allowing those persons to be here for me. So that's what I'm saying. Like, ultimately, how is that shaping for you? You know what I mean? Like, how is that faring for you? Are you seeing yourself with this post-traumatic slave syndrome or post-traumatic stress disorder with your natural selection in, I guess, the law of attraction?
I guess it really, I mean, I feel like, yeah, for sure. I feel like it has to, I feel like it has to. Like I said, I'm definitely, like, more...
Help us out, Peter.
I mean, I guess it depends on the situation, because I could say a lot of people were just lessons, like, lessons learned. Like, you gain something from them, from not being friends with them anymore, because you saw, like, the dark side of that person, and you found out exactly what...
Yeah, I'm not even, like, talking on a level like that. I'm saying, I'm more guarded. Like, I'm not as guarded as you, but, like, I'm more guarded with my energy.
You think I'm guarded?
I'm saying, like, with your energy. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm less likely now to just, like, give you, like, 100% me unless, like, you deserve that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I really don't.
See, I'm giving you 100% me off the rip, because I'd rather you tell me, okay, that's too much. Let's tweak this. Because I want somebody to, I'd rather you love me, Goose, and mm-hmm. I have to tell you, okay, Goose, that's enough, man. You know what I mean? Because in my mind, it's easier to tame a tiger than it is to make a pussycat. Wow, I don't want to have to try to make you love me. You know what I'm saying? And I firmly believe in the law of attraction, so I'm going to let my cup run over. I'm going to give you all of me. And then if you fuck that up, I just need to exercise the strength, courage, and confidence to be like, homie, I'm cutting you. I'm through with you for a year. In my mind, I'm not going to tell you that.
Right.
But I'm going to fall back. I'm out the group chat. I'm not really answering your I'm ghosting, really. Because I reserve the right to be able to do that. It's my life and my time. I don't owe you anything, especially if you fucking me over.
Right.
So, maybe I'll see you at the mall. Maybe I'll see you at a play. Maybe I'll see you at a social function. And we like, damn, homie, where you been? Man, I'm around, man. I miss you. Let's get back together. If I see that you've matured to a space that is where I need you to be, then we can rock. Because I feel like, okay, kids is kids, right? You kids and you be friends, and we got Nerf guns and we got paintball and we play sports, we friends, right? But when you become an adult, it's a point where you learn too much and you can't just have friends for the sake of being friends anymore, right?
That's exactly.
So we already had our friends. Y'all grew up together. Y'all already had y'all friendship, right? So for me to come into this friend space, I had to be contributing something. Right? You might not look at it like that overtly, but that's the covert signal going on, because y'all friends. And the dynamics of a friendship, if friendships is, you're going to be naturally guarded of y'all friendship. Like, I don't know, dude. That's your friend. You see what I'm saying? We don't have to, me and Peter didn't have to start speaking day one. We know each other because of you. But the dynamics of the situation is, maybe a fruitful conversation at some point was like, hey, I could talk to this dude.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I feel like I'm guarded, and I kind of watch, like, how other people are moving, and I decide if I even gonna let that, like, person in. Otherwise, I'm pretty just, like, quiet and out of it.
But why is that?
That's just the way I am.
That's the default?
That's what I'm saying. I think that's, like, the...
Is that the default, or is that just, like...
when you're around energy that doesn't supply you, you get like kind of check out.
No, because I'm like checked out from the, like, I'm not in it to begin with. I'm just gonna watch from the outside to see how, like, that person is and see if I'm even gonna get in the first place.
See, I'm super like introverted in the space. Like, I'm super quiet. Like, the best way I can explain it, when we was downstairs for the first couple of times, we was down here kicking with Mario, and he was just like, come down here, do it first. I ain't want to come. Then I finally come down here. When I come down here, I don't speak to nobody. Like, the first couple times I'm there. And then eventually I start to speak to people. That's my natural approach to everything.
That's what I'm saying. That's what mine is.
I need to learn what space I'm in. Like, I need to see what's happening before I even open my mouth.
That's what I'm saying. That's where I'm at. Like, that's just what I do with everything now.
So I feel like you getting into that space where you're just letting it overflow then?
I'm not there yet.
You're still not sharing?
No.
100%?
No.
How about you, Peter? I mean, it's good to know that, though. That's a great level of awareness.
I mean, I would say I'm in the same position as you guys, as far as that.
Well, we're in two different spaces.
Yeah, we're in different spaces.
I share abundantly.
He's always like this, especially like the first time you have a conversation with him. Like, one, like, you know what I'm saying?
If you get to, like, get to this part of me, it's like, I don't even know what to do with this level of energy.
Like meeting him, like, if you know what I'm saying, if you're willing to have a conversation with him, like, he'll talk to anyone about anything. So, like, that's where me and you are different. Like, I'm mad quiet, especially when I first meet you. Even if you try to talk to me, I'm still, like, not going to have a lot to say. You're different. Like, anyone could come and talk to you about anything.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I'm not like that yet. You're in that, you know what I'm saying? You're in that space. Like, you
said, I'm always trying to defend my own level of emotional intelligence, because I'm in a different space where I come from a space of hyperaggression. I feel like that's just American. Like, we just hyperaggression. We like the passive. We like to show it as other things.
Right.
But we like to hit.
100%.
Like to hit, be hit. So I come from that, right? But in this world, it's very plucky. People like to hit me with intellect. So you only get smarter by playing a smarter opponent. So I'm automatically hopping into this feeling like you're smarter than me, and I'm trying to synthesize strategy.
Right.
It's fun. That becomes a game for me. It's fun. It gives me energy. So I don't know. That's just how I do. What about you, Pete?
I'd probably be more along the lines with you than Goose. I talk more.
Yeah, but you are in sales, so are you always an extrovert?
I always have to talk. I don't have a choice.
So would you consider yourself an extrovert? Or an introvert?
I think it's or an ambivert. About being comfortable with being uncomfortable. Getting comfortable with being uncomfortable.
I think that's just the mark of a creative, you know, a problem solver. That's just how they naturally approach things. Because I don't like public speaking. I don't like being in front of people. I don't like talking like this. You know what I mean? I don't like sharing my thoughts with the world. But I have to hop into this other mode of a person and spill out. You know what I mean? I have to get into that Phoenix mode and just the extrovert mode. The introvert me is in the burn ward, chilling, watching video, like watching, reading, watching interviews, studying all day long, writing, all kind of shit like that. While the Phoenix me is right here on the podcast, talking with y'all, talking shit in the world, doing whatever. You know what I mean? It's a difference. It's all of me, but I'm also looking for that same kind of, like, I don't know, that just that plasticity in the creatives that I work with. You know what I mean? I would like to see that you need time to break down too. You know what I mean? I feel like if you running on high all the time, you're gonna burn out. You gotta have your own way to recharge too. So, you know, in building my team and building folks around me, and it takes time. It's taking time. is allowing people to make me a part of their teams first. You know what I'm saying? And see what I'm providing well. And then once I know what I provide well, I slowly start to allow persons that want to do things for me, do things for me. I don't block my blessings. I know what I need to outsource. I usually speak about it or I write it down, and the universe has a way of presenting that person into my life. Or presenting, I said, I want a podcast. I got it. I ain't had nowhere to record it. So I started coming over here, and Goose started staying up with me, and he started producing the joint. You know what I'm saying? Helping me come up with content. So I felt like with everything that I'm doing, I wanted to be in consulting. I wanted to work at a major creativity firm, getting that. I want my joint to be popping. It's moving that way. So, like, everything I want to have a teacher, I want to teach more classes, that's happening. So, like, everything I want to be happening is moving in that direction, but it takes for the things around me to be in concert, right? So it takes for me to realize where I am within my space, staring at the table, or at the head of the table, being able to shift gears within those spaces, and then synthesizing strategy to always contribute to that upward mobility. So that's what you say that you is what you doing, Peter?
I mean, yeah, I'd have to agree with that. I mean, the people who you surround yourself with are incredibly important, because you don't realize how they influence you in ways you don't even see it sometimes.
You're fucking right. Unconscious bias. Just influence. You know what I mean? And that's the thing about being a sentient, being a human. We need to feel. We need to touch and be touched. And it's like, most folks won't, you know, close themselves down to touching and being touched. It's more rather you want to be hard, play hard, and to only appear insecure and really weak. To go back to being a caricature of yourself on this stage of a world, or world of a stage. I think that was pretty dope, though. Y'all got anything else to add to that? How do we close that out? How do we conclude? What's the moral to all of this? How do we bring all this together? How does if a person just burned up, how are they reborn as a phoenix after hearing all of that?
Like, I mean, anyone considered the head of the
table. What's the purpose of this episode, Head of the Table?
Anyone considered the head of the table, you just gotta make that choice to take steps in that direction. I guess so, like that.
And have a good team surrounding you.
That's so.
The head of the table is up for grabs at all times.
The head of the table is a figment of your imagination. Right.
That's what I'm saying.
If you believe in it.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. It's up for grabs at all times.
Yeah.
It's just if you. Saying,
but you also need to feel
like you are or you aren't.
You also need to know when you need to shift gears. All the same, I think that's just as important.
I mean, you gotta be humble, yeah, for sure.
You need to know when you need to be learning,
right?
Like I'm just a person that when I'm talking, I'm teaching, I'm listening, I'm learning. What the fuck, what's going on? Even if we busting balls, talking shit, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's some smarts in the joke, something, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I feel like upward mobility is like the rising tide that lifts all boats. Look at Pluto, though. That's crazy. Like, Pluto is in the podcast.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't want to say it's this well-rounded thing, but it is. It's pretty holistic. Like, if you want upward mobility, you have to be in concert within those spaces. You have to know that. You looking at a table. I feel like you always have to have a table that you're looking at. You always have to have a table that you're a part of. And you always have to be, you have to have a table that you're in leadership of. You know what I'm saying? With your team around you. You know who's on your team. You know who's your CIO. You know who's just, and you know if you play in all those positions, and you know if you're playing all those positions, you know when you need to outsource. Mm-hmm. You know when you need to hire a Peter. You know when you need to hire a Goose. You know when you need to hire a me. The Phoenix.
Also, too, you have to lead by motivation, not fear. And a lot of bosses.
And what's that's code? What does that look like?
You know, there's bosses that just love to terrify everyone, so people are just afraid of them. So they do the work because they're afraid of them. And then you have bosses that do things because, you know, you're motivated by that boss. You want to do things for that boss. You want to come to work and do your job. You're not fearful you're going to get fired if you don't do it.
So you saying that I come in late. What you going to say? Hey, Notch, he was late. Good job?
No. I mean, it's all about just saying the right things to the people to motivate them to do better.
Being tactful. Like,
yeah,
That's what we talked about. Was that two episodes ago? Was that last episode or two episodes?
It's not about being overreactive. Last
episode. It's not about what?
It's not about being overreactive. You can't overreact and act out in those situations.
Because somebody comes from a different culture than you.
Absolutely. And people make mistakes.
People going to make mistakes and people going to be egregious. People going to do dumb shit. Just to see how you respond. Just to see if you're deserving of the seat that you employ or you occupy at the table. Just because you got it don't mean that motherfuckers is happy that you got it or want to see you with it. Y'all agree?
Right.
So it's their responsibility to try to knock you off your fucking square. Right? It's up to you to see that, to know that these persons are going to be trying to knock you off your square. And you need to stay completely resolved within your creative endeavor. Hence, knowing what place, what time you fit in. At the table, looking at the table, the executive, the maestro of the table. So, if my guys, these guys ain't got nothing else to lay on you, man, we gonna Superman love our way on out of here. Superman, I wasn't gonna play Superman lover, but I'm gonna go here. I think this is appropriate for the table.
Superman lover wasn't it?
Should I play Superman? You think Superman lover should be it?
I know.
I'm the Superman lover. I love everybody, love everything. That's where I'm at. But I feel like this one for the head of the table is apropos.
You said it.
I don't know why. I'm trying to think about it. I'm trying to give you a reason why. Well, let's say this. For all of those that said that you could never be the head of your very own table, for all of those that discounted you, no matter who it was, it could be your blood relative, your loved one, the teachers, anybody in leadership that told you you wasn't shit, you was worthless, you'll always be such. This here, your subscription to this podcast, even if it's just at this point, if it's been up to this point, you know, like I know, if you've been listening and you've been doing the work, this is the big payback. Is that fitting? Does that suffice?
Sounds about right.
So for everybody that, you know what I'm saying, smacks your school lunch down. All the girls that told you no, Peter, bet they never thought they'd see you now.
We're coming back and killing them.
Come on, man. Back-to-back Teslas with the doors up.
Right. Big yachts.
Straight up. And we all wearing billion brand shit. Yeah. Technically, right now, yeah, I'm wearing my sexual tension hoodie. By at Zachary Billions. They had Cretaceous in that shit back in the day, right?
Right.
So, yeah, we about to close out, man. We rambling right now, but we about to close out. As always, it's such a treat. It's so hard. It gets harder and harder to leave y'all all the time. And I can stay here with y'all all the time, but then the podcast would be watered down. It would be lifeless at that point. So, we just gave you out of morphin time. Hope you was able to tap in, catch it. We hope you was able to, as always, to catch the gems and the skills and the tools for creativity, resilience, imagination, and grit, always laced and intertwined throughout the heartbeat of, or the soul, or the ether of every episode that we produce. Yeah, dig that. So reach out to us, DM us. Where can they find you all at?
Goose Wavy on everything.
Goose Wavy on everything. Peter, where can they find you at? The most interesting man in the world.
I'm only on Instagram though.
So Peter, find Peter on Instagram. DM me. You like compliments. And y'all can get at me on Instagram at Ask the Phoenix. That's Ask the Phoenix, AskTheHoenix. Or on LinkedIn, reach out to me. You can either look me up at Phoenix Innovation Group or under my name, Naja Bolden, NAJJA, BOULDIN. Look me up, DM me, chat with me, ask me anything, ask about being featured on the podcast. We love to have you on here. It's a whole new year, brand new year. We coming up on our first year. We want to do something real special with y'all. We're going to definitely start incorporating some new things into the show. But we definitely want to become more interactive with those that want to engage within this community. All right? And loving peak performance talk, personal freedom talk, individuality talk, and at the same time, high success, you know what I mean? And sustaining high level success for long, long periods of time. Entrepreneurship, scaling businesses, scaling impact, social enterprise, all those kind of things. So that's all for now, Phoenixes. Please share the podcast with your people if y'all getting anything from it. That's all for now. Peace and blessings. And freedom to the queens and kings and to the gods and goddesses. Continue to transform. Until next time, Phoenixes, flame on.